Proverbs 26:27 says this, "Whoever digs a pit will fall into it, and a stone will come back on the one who starts it rolling." Rolling stones reveal the heart. Rolling stones reveal the heart. A long time ago in a lavish empire, his king sat on a very plush throne. He enjoyed throwing parties and banquets. And one particular day, he decided he'd throw a very lavish banquet. It would last 7 days. And so he had it all arranged out in the court of the garden of the king's palace. It was very elaborate. This is how it's described. It says, "There were white cotton curtains and blue hangings tied with cords of fine linen and purple to silver rings and marble pillars. There were couches of gold and silver on a mosaic pavement of porphyry, marble, mother of pearl, and colored stones. Drinks were served in golden goblets, goblets of different kinds, and the royal wine was lavished according to the bounty of the king." It was so lavish that not only did the king decide to have a banquet, but the queen, who was watching the king, decided she wanted to have a banquet too. So she had her own banquet. So the king had his 7-day banquet. The queen had her 7-day banquet for the ladies. And right about day 7, the king decided he'd like to see the queen. So he summoned her to him. Well, she was having a pretty good job with her girls, and she decided she wasn't going to go. So she said no. And this made the king pretty upset. In fact, it made him very upset. And so he established a decree, and it said, "Every man is the master of his house." She was banished from the palace, and that was the end of the queen's banquets. The king began to think about this. He decided he needed some faithful queens. And so he had some ladies brought before him, a whole line of beauties that were lined up for him to choose from. And so he began to look through them. And among them was a captive girl from Jerusalem. Her name was Esther. She was in this line of beautiful women, and he went through and he was most delighted with Esther. Her cousin was named Mordecai, and Mordecai actually worked in the king's palace. Well, the king selected her among his harem. And the whole time, Mordecai, serving in the palace, was able to keep it a secret that this was his cousin. And she was able to keep it a secret that she was from Jerusalem. And I guess maybe part of it is the fact that when you're comfortable, you're often naive. And when you're surrounded with luxuries, you're often absent-minded of people outside of yourself. Because the king was real naive. In fact, he was just plain ignorant. He never knew where she was from, and evidently he didn't care. She was with him now, and she was in his palace. He loved Esther more than all the others, and he didn't even know where she was from. He knew nothing about her ethnicity. He loved her so much that when time came for him to have a banquet again, he changed the name. He called it Esther's Banquet. Esther's banquet. Esther grew in his favor. And in time, even Esther's cousin Mordecai grew in the king's favor. Because one time, Mordecai overheard a couple of guys who worked in the palace who were trying to plot the assassination of the king. Mordecai heard about it. He slipped a little bit of inside information to Esther, who in turn slipped the information to the king, and they totally overthrew the assassination plot and saved the king's life. Well, there was also an assistant to the king, and he did not like Mordecai. In fact, he hated Mordecai. One of the things that the king had decreed when this former queen dissed him in front of his court, it was that the king's reputation would be salvaged by decreeing that every man would be the master of his house. And so one of the things that he was involving in this decree is that when the master of the house enters the property, that you do obeisance before him, which meant bowing or prostrating, or some form of honor and glorification to the one who's in authority over you. And so one of the things that Mordecai really hated about, that Haman, the assistant to the king, really hated about Mordecai was that even though they both worked in the palace, and this was the king's palace, when Haman took his position as this authority, this assistant to the king, Mordecai refused to worship him, refused to do obeisance before him, refused to honor him or get low before him. And this really ate Haman up. I mean, it just tied him up in knots, and he felt like he was totally being disregarded in the same way that the king was disregarded by the queen. In fact, Haman hated Mordecai so much and everything that had to do with Mordecai that Haman is called the enemy of the Jews. I mean, that's quite a title. There aren't too many people in history that have the title enemy of the Jews, but Haman had that. And he began to conspire against Mordecai, how to get Mordecai out of here and how to get rid of this people that Mordecai belongs to. He didn't know that Esther was involved in this whole plot. So he begins conspiring against Mordecai, but against all of the Jewish people. He conspires with the king and he says, there are some who are not following your decree to do obeisance to the master of the house. And that is undermining your kingship. The king said, well, we can't have this. Like I said, he was comfortably naive. The king said, we can't have this, and said, Haman, I want you to do what you need to do to solve this problem. And so Haman did. He brought his other guys with him. They grabbed some lots and they cast the lots to decide what day they were going to cleanse the nation of all the Jews. And so they cast the lots, and the lots fell to the 13th day of the 12th month called Adar. And the lots chose that this is the day that all the Jews would die. This was Haman's plan. The decree is set in motion. Mordecai is mortified. He starts to wear sackcloth. He goes into mourning because his people are going to be swept out of the nation. He tells Esther, and Esther begins to plan. She says, Mordecai, don't give up hope yet. They begin to think that maybe God has put her in this position for a certain reason. She says, I want you to go home. I want you to take off the sackcloth, but I do want you to pray, and I want you to pray and fast for 3 days, and I will do it too. And then I'll begin approaching the king on how we might change the situation. He goes home. They pray, they fast for 3 days. And after 3 days, she comes to the court of the king. In this day and time, no one approached the king without having been summoned. And she came to the court across from his throne, and he was sitting on his throne, and she's out in the court, and she steps in the doorway without a beckon or summons. She risked her very life. She could have been killed at that point. But remember that she'd found favor in the king's heart. He loved her. And when he saw her, his heart just melted. He held up his golden scepter, which meant, you may approach. And she came and she approached. And as he held up the golden scepter, she put her hand on top of the golden scepter, which said, I accept your summons. And he said, what would you like to say to me? She said, I want to give a banquet in your honor, and I want you to bring a friend. I want you to bring Haman, your assistant. He said, okay, I would be happy to come to your banquet. This is this spirit of festivals that's going on right now. I would be happy to come to your banquet. So she invites the king, she invites Haman, she makes all the arrangements, and you know, Haman, he's feeling pretty proud of himself because now he is accepted into this kind of inner royalty, the king and the queen. And he's right there with them. So Haman goes home, and what he does when he gets home is he starts to brag to his friends and his family. He says, I'm going to be there with the king and the queen. Nobody else is invited, but I'm there. Aren't you proud of me? And he began to tell, and his friends said, yes, we are proud of you. And then he began to think about it, and he said, but you know, there is this one guy that just really gets under my skin. His name's Mordecai. And even though I'm in this place of royalty, he fails to honor and respect me. And so every day when I come in, he just stands there like I'm just somebody else. So his wife said, you can't let that happen. She said, I tell you what you should do. That 13th day of the 12th month when Mordecai's race is going to be wiped out, I think you should build an extra gallows just for him. 50 cubits high, big, so everybody can see it. He said, I think I will. He did. He had the blueprints made. They drew it up. They drafted it out, and they built a huge gallows like had never been seen to hang Mordecai on. Haman went on to the banquet, proud with his plan. The same night that Haman was having all these friends gather around him and brag, but also devise, the king had a very sleepless night. And in his sleepless night, he got up and he started to read, because that's what you do when you can't sleep, I guess. He began to read and he pulled out the annals and the records of the kingdom, and he started to go through them. And you know what he found in the histories of the kingdom? He found that there had been a plot of assassination against his life. He found that there was a guy named Mordecai who had slipped information to the queen. And the queen had told the right officials, and they had saved the king's life. And he thought, wow, this guy Mordecai, I want to respect and honor him. The next day, Haman's having his gallows built. The king is thinking about how he wants to honor and distinguish Mordecai, who has saved his life from an assassination plot. And they spend a lot of time together, and king says to Haman, Haman, how would you honor somebody that you want to lift up? Haman thought, oh man, he's going to celebrate me. He said, this is what I would do. I would put royal robes on that guy. I would have him sit on a royal king's horse. I would put a royal crown on him. And then I would have someone else to lead the horse through the town square and shout out, this is what the king feels about someone who deserves honor. The king said, you're right, Haman. That's what I'm going to do. And the person I want to honor is Mordecai, Haman's nemesis. And he said, Haman, will you see to it? And by the way, will you lead the horse through the town square and shout real loud so everybody can see? Because I want everybody to know how proud I am of Mordecai, who saved my life. Well, the day of the banquet came. Esther holds the banquet. Now we have a mortified Haman. He shows up right there near the king. And as Esther's in the second day of the banquet, she begins to bring up this idea of cleansing her people from the nation. And the king, in his comfortable naivety, asks her, what are you talking about, your people? She said, this decree that you have to kill the Jews on the 13th day of the 12th month, these are my people, and you have sentenced me to death. He said, I'm the king. There's no way I'm going to have this happen. And right about this time, Haman is hearing what's going on. He's hearing his whole plan and strategy beginning to crumble. And as it begins to crumble, he begins to get desperate. And he leaps to the bed of Queen Esther, or the couch where she's sitting, as if to plead mercy. And the king sees this and says, not only have you tried to conspire against those who've been faithful to me, but now you're trying to defile the queen and assault her in my very presence, in my very house. You're more guilty of any decree than I have ever had disobeyed so far in my palace. At the very minute the king said these words, he said, will he even assault the queen in my presence, in my very house? Scripture says, as soon as the words left his mouth, the authorities that were standing by immediately covered Haman's head, and they took him outside to the 50-cubit high gallows that he had built for Mordecai, and they hanged him. And they hanged him on the 13th day of the 12th month of Adar. And those lots that Haman cast to decide the day of the Jewish cleansing, those are called Purim. And to this day, Jews hold a feast about this time of year to celebrate God's favor and God's providence, to recognize that God watches over and cares for those who are faithful. To this day, the Jews hold a feast. And you know when that feast begins? Tomorrow night at sundown. March 9th, 2009, when the sun drifts over the horizon. Purim. Haman rolled the stones and they rolled back on him in so many ironic ways. And here's the thing that I think if God could whisper a voice to Haman and to us, be careful what you build. Are you devising gallows for someone else? Rolling stones reveals the heart. And, you know, we think about the time that Jesus confronted a crowd of stone rollers when the authorities, the religious authorities, brought an adulterous woman before him. And they had stones in their hands. I mean, talk about rolling stones. They were ready to hurl the stones. And Jesus confronted them and bent down in the dust and wrote something in the dust and was able to indict every single one of them and set her free at the same time. Rolling stones reveals the heart. James says in chapter 2, speak and act as those who are going to be judged by the law that gives freedom, because judgment without mercy will be shown to anyone who has not been merciful. Mercy triumphs over judgment. Rolling stones reveals the heart. And I believe we are all rolling stones, even if we think we're not rolling stones. I believe we're rolling stones, even if we think we're merely rolling the dice. That all of us are adding power and energy to something. What are we building? Dallas Willard says that every drop of water is giving energy to something, whether it's a crushing wave or the motion of the sea. Every drop of water is giving energy and adding something, and a crushing wave is constituted of all these droplets of water. We are rolling stones, but what are we building? And in the Wednesday emails, I encourage at the close of every email, keep tipping the world toward Christ. And it's rooted in this idea that even if you think you're not doing anything, you're doing something. You're just not doing it for Christ. We're tipping the world toward something or other. And God has invited us to tip it toward Him and His kingdom. Roll the stones in His name. God Himself was a stone roller. We see how God rolled the stones in during the season of Lent. We're leading up to the crucifixion, before which we have a tomb with a stone that rolled away. And what do rolling stones do? They reveal the heart. God revealed His heart in Christ. Rolling stones reveal the heart. What are you rolling? What are you building? Let's roll in His name.